The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Good day. You're listening to America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I'm Carrie Weber, executive editor for America Magazine.
And I'm Patty Gilger, sitting in for Father Matt Malone this week. Carrie, it's really great to be here. I was with Matt most of the summertime as you were gone.
No, we're changing things up a little bit.
You know, I think I'd rather listen to and speak with you than I would to Matt. Matt's wonderful, but come on.
You know, this is it's being recorded. This will be available elsewhere. So you know,
Matt, no surprises from me. I'm really pleased to be here. This is going to be fantastic, and we're joined also by Zach Davis.
Hey, Patty.
Hey, Carrie.
Hello, Zach.
I also think that it's great to be here. I will not go as far to say that.
You're not going to pick one of us.
No, no.
I think that's wise.
Yes, I am a discerning person in who I pledge my allegiance to.
So I know we're
still. You're still trying to figure it out?
Yes, precisely.
Or you secretly know but don't want to get fired?
Well, you know.
Or in a fight on the right
I'm
going to
keep
air.
My cards close.
I think we know the answer to that one. And I will try not to hold that against you for the rest of the show. This week, we have a lot of good things to talk about besides who we would rather speak to amongst our staff. And that includes Cyrus Habib, who's Lieutenant Governor of the state of Washington.
Cyrus, we'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah.
So we have this article that you wrote called Stop Saying College Isn't For Everyone. I wonder if you could maybe just tell us a little bit about why you wanted to write this piece.
Yeah, so when I was campaigning for Lieutenant Governor in 2016, I traveled all around the state, and I started to notice, you know, at various, you know, in various town halls and discussions and forums, I started to notice this sentence being thrown around by politicians really in both parties, and that sentiment was, you know, college isn't for everyone. And it was, as I said, it was something you'd hear from Democrats and Republicans, and it tended to be a big applause line. And but I started to feel this discomfort with that idea, and I couldn't really identify why. And as I thought about it and kind of reflected on why that bothered me, that concept bothered me so much, because it wasn't said from a place of you know, prejudice or you know, discrimination or anything like that. It was said actually, usually from a tone of compassion. But it bothered me because, as a child, I grew up with a disability. I became blind at age 8, and that sentiment of college isn't for everyone reminded me so much of the way people would contract the possibilities for me. Thankfully not most people, and thankfully not my parents or teachers, but it was that same idea that, you know what, you don't need to think about college. That's really for someone else, because, you know, and I think I mentioned this in the article, that when I would talk to folks about, you know, who would say that, okay, college isn't for everyone, I'd ask them, well, did you go to college? And it turned out that almost always the person saying that themselves had gone to college. And then even more strikingly, when I would ask them, what, you know, okay, so are you not sending your own kids to college? It would turn out that they're actually sending their own kids to college.
Wow.
You know, it just makes you ask that question, okay, if college is for you and college is for your kids, who is it that college, quote unquote, isn't for?
It's a great question that you're raising there, and I think a pointed one, Cyrus. I really appreciate the story you're telling about how this line became resonant with you in your own mind. And that image of people saying this, Democrats and Republicans saying this, and that it being an applause line, I find myself really surprised by that. Do you have any understanding of, like, why were people applauding there? What were they applauding as the politicians are saying something like this?
You know, I think it's that we're in a very populist moment right now in our politics, in both parties. And so there's a lot of rejection of you know, anything that's considered elite or elitist. And unfortunately, higher education has been painted by many people as part of, you know, a structure that is elitist in our country and that's led to different economic outcomes for different sorts of people. And so, you know, rather than, unfortunately, rather than politicians saying, okay, we know that a higher education makes a huge difference in economic outcomes, let's give everyone a path mm-hmm. to that kind of an education. Instead of that, they're saying, you know what, who needs a college education? And you know, and I think so there's some of it is that it's a simple answer because it's much harder, right, to try to say, like, here's my plan for getting everyone a college education.
It is hard.
The opportunity
That's right.
to get one. That's much harder than saying, you know what, let's just say college isn't for everyone. All these politicians have been, you know, making people feel bad. And that's the second thing is that I think there's clearly when you look at the Trump election, there's a lot of people in this country who feel disrespected and who feel looked down upon. And they feel looked down upon in many ways. It's a statement about how much social capital college affords that they feel looked down upon by people who went to college. And so it feels kind of, you know, valedictory and you know, maybe even revolutionary to say, you know what, college isn't for everyone. I'm just as good as this person who went to college. And of course, I think that's, you know, kind of changing the goalpost a little bit, right? That's not, the question is not, therefore, are you a better person if you went to college? In my mind, it's much closer to, if I were to say, I think healthcare is for everyone. Does that mean I look down on people who don't have health insurance? Absolutely not. It's for their sake, and it's on their behalf that I think we need to be working to give healthcare access to everyone. The same thing is true with regard to education.
Yeah, I was the first in my family to go to college, and while my family was supportive of me, there was also a level of, like, I don't think they really understood why I wanted to go do it. Mm-hmm. I think they rightly were looking at college costs have gone up 197% at private schools and 280 at public ones since like 79. And the wage gains have not kept up with that, certainly. So I think they see a lot of people who maybe did go or didn't finish who were kind of really burned by this. What's your sense of, what do we need to fix about that? Because I think they've got a point.
Yeah, Zach. I mean, I think you mentioned something in passing there, which is, you know, didn't finish, and I think that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Because number one, I think we need to do a lot more. I mentioned this in the article. I think we need to do a lot more to make college more affordable. So I don't want to on any level to suggest that there's not a problem with college affordability, and that's one of the things that we've been working on in our state, and that involves both greater financial aid. It involves really calling upon our colleges and universities to innovate in their delivery model, and it also calls upon all of us to hold colleges accountable to four-year graduation, which is something that you find in private universities, but unfortunately our public universities often have 5 or even 6 year average graduation times. But here's the thing. It is true that tuition has gone up and that's a problem, but so too has the cost of housing. And yet, I don't know anybody who would say that a smart long-term economic move is to be a renter instead of to borrow in order to buy a house. You know, and I think the ROI, and it's been shown on a college education, if you complete, is far greater even than getting a mortgage and buying a house. And so it's a tremendous investment. And so in building long-term equity, just as home ownership is in this country. You mentioned, you know, you being the first in your family, and I think one of the things, and I know you're from the Midwest, I think one of the things that we struggle with in parts of our country, including parts of Washington State, where there were traditionally lots of jobs that didn't require college education. Basically, if you graduated from high school, particularly if you were male, you graduated from high school, you could go and work in a factory or work in construction,
yeah,
and you'd have
put
a good
your 40
union
years in.
Job.
Yeah.
You'd have a good union job with a pension and health insurance, a lot of these things. Now, a lot of those things, particularly in the Midwest, have been eroded politically. And, you know, we've seen the weakening of unions and worker protections. But also, a lot of those jobs are just gone due to automation primarily, and also somewhat due to trade and globalization. And so the fact of the matter is, 8 out of 10 of the jobs that have been lost since the Great Recession are ones that did not require a college degree. A lot of those jobs in the Rust Belt, but all over the country. I'm sitting here right now about 10 blocks away from Amazon's first cashierless store, the Amazon Go store, and we're going to see more of those. Already they've spread. I think there's even one where you guys are in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And 9 out of 10 of the jobs created since the Great Recession are ones that do require a higher education. So there is, to your point, I think there's a lot of education that needs to go on of educating parents, the importance of this. And I'll tell you, immigrant parents really get it. I mean, a lot of, why do most people, you'll find, Indian immigrants to the U.S. who were doctors or engineers back in India, they come here and they might drive for Uber. For what? So that their kid can go to college. But we ourselves as second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation Americans, I think have taken some things for granted and don't recognize the changing economy.
Well, and a lot of the things that you've mentioned are problems that have solutions that would take quite a bit of work. And in some ways, the line college isn't for everyone means that we don't have to work to make college more affordable, because then we just can easily write people off saying, well, you are not going because it wasn't for you. But what it does is it sidelines people through, economic classes and social classes that might otherwise really enjoy college.
Yeah, it's like I always tell people, I grew up in a relatively affluent part of our country. I grew up in Bellevue, Washington, not far from where Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos live. And somehow, when people say, well, some people just aren't, they don't want to go to college, and say, well, miraculously, all the people who think that college is for them live in this neighborhood or this city, and the ones who just don't want to go to college live in this other place. So we know it's communities of color, and we know it's rural parts of our country. We know it's kids with disabilities, like I was. And I often tell people, by the time, because folks will say to me, well, you're being harsh on a 15-year-old who says that, he just doesn't want to go to college. And I said, well, look, by the time a kid is 15, the world has told him or her what they're good for, and they internalize that. And so they say, God, I'm not one of these, fancy kids from the Upper West Side or the Upper East Side that goes to college. Look at where I grew up. No one I know went to college. My folks didn't go to college. I'm not that kind of kid. And it's intimidating and it's frightening. And so by the time, you get to that age, you have a lot of unpacking. You have a lot of kind of unwinding of social expectations to
do.
Make a kid feel that confidence.
And one of the things you bring up is that a lot of people imagine college as this place where you spend 4 years studying existential philosophy in some ivy-covered quadrangle.
That's how I view philosophy of college, just so we're clear about all of that.
Which I love, by the way. I don't want to...
No, I don't.
So, I think there's this dual response to that both can be true, right? That's not what everyone has to do all the time, but that element also is really important to the formation of a person, and that this might be the only place where someone might encounter that opportunity to think about those things in a really deliberate way with other people and have those conversations.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's why I think everyone, on this show right now, what we all loved about our higher education. And I know I listened to your interview a couple weeks ago with Father McCarthy, I really liked his point that this is about more than just economic pathways. This is also about our ability to prepare people to discern truth and to understand the difference between fact and fiction, and ask big questions, which really should not be the exclusive privilege of wealthy people, right? Every person, irrespective of economic means, is going to face challenges in life, is going to be asking big questions about themselves and their children, their families, and their and what they ought to do with their future. And so college creates a space to ask those questions, to look at how they've been interrogated before, and in an environment in which you're kind of given a little bit of an on-ramp into adulthood, where you do have some individuality and some individual responsibility, but you're not completely out there on your own. There is a safety net built into the residential college system. All of that said, I think we need to recognize that for many people, the reality today is that they may not be able to go straight to college. They may need to work to support their family. Our K-12 system isn't preparing every kid to succeed in college on day one. Mm-hmm. We also simply just don't have the space in our colleges right now, even if we were to wave a magic wand to allow colleges to bring people into the residential system the way that it is. So that said, what we've been working on in my office in the state of Washington is how can we separate these two things. One is a kind of coming of age experience, which college can afford, and the other one is a credentialing process that lets you not just get a job today, but gives you, it's enough of a kind of a broad enough degree that it does allow you to gain those kind of skills, critical thinking, communication skills, that will allow you to stay, as I like to say, one step ahead of the robots as we change, as our economy changes. Keep finding employment opportunities for yourself. So that's, again, it's not a knock at all. And in fact, in my mind, every American should have the opportunity and should seriously be encouraged to experience a liberal arts education, no matter what they want to go on and do. But we should, at the very least, begin by providing a credentialing pathway to a degree that's kind of allows you to travel through the economy over time.
Yeah, I was certainly not pigeonholed in my career choices with my philosophy and theology degrees. So, one question I have is
a lot of times politicians will say, well, why would we have someone go and study philosophy, or as I did, English literature, when there's a great job, down the street for them right now. They should go do, learn a technical trade, and there's a great job for them today. And it's like, well, if you look at, steelwork or auto building or timber extraction or all these things, 30 years ago, people would have said there's great jobs. Why do you want to send someone to college? The fact of the matter is, jobs are going to change. A 17-year-old who learns a trade or craft today, odds are 3D printing and other technological innovations are going to mean that in 10 years, that person is going to have to do something different. And if they're too narrowly trained, it's going to be really, really hard. And what we've seen, unfortunately, in our country is that when folks need to retrain, there's a lot of, if they lose their job to a robot or to foreign competition, there's a lot of depression and humiliation and loss of dignity that comes with that. It's not that easy for them to just pick up and go back and retool. The broader degree credential allows them to be more mobile in the labor market.
Cyrus, one of the things that you mentioned earlier that I think complements some of this stuff is this internal belief that certain categories of students, rural, inner city students, often racial minorities, have a challenge with believing that they themselves are the kinds of people who are college material. Now, as a Jesuit, I worked for a handful of years at a school, high school called Red Cloud Indian School on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. It's regularly one of the poorest counties in the United States. And we have worked for a long time kind of to change the inner belief of these kids that they can actually go to excellent colleges and then make it once they get there. And then that's been one of the really big, I think, tasks that we're finding for ourselves these days is yeah, we can maybe build some kind of inner belief in these kids, you know, and get some understanding of theology or understanding of English literature or understanding of all these classical studies that we would want to have. And in that sense of who they are as persons, we can get them to college. But then how we keep them there, sustain them in these places, this is also a real challenge that we're having.
Cyrus, I was wondering.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, I know, and that's why I was really excited to write this piece for America, because, mm-hmm. you know, I know that higher education, but also preparing kids for higher education, is such an important part of the charism of the society. And I remember, you know, my roommate and best friend in college had gone to Regis,
and he
was from a pretty upper middle class family, but his close friends from Regis were from all different types of economic backgrounds from around New York City, from Jackson Heights, Queens, and from poorer parts of Brooklyn and the Bronx, and I got to meet these kids, and they were all going to different colleges and universities all around the tri-state area. And it really showed me. I mean, it's something I know that at least at that school is taken very seriously. We need to do more in our public schools, mm-hmm. To give confidence to kids in areas that where, because of traditional redlining and other things, just neighborhoods where entire communities have not gone to college, and a kid might not have a mentor or someone to tell them, hey, you're going to do just fine there. You're going to do great. It's going to be and I'll tell you one small thing. That doesn't cost any money, that I've encouraged teachers to do, is as early as fourth and fifth grade, start talking to kids about and start making college fun. You know, put college sports posters and memorabilia up on the wall in the classroom, maybe for the school that the teacher attended, and get them kind of a sense that this is something that they can look forward to.
That's a really wonderful idea, Cyrus. And thank you so much. We are out of time today, but we will continue to follow you in your political career. And I think you have 3 votes for when you run for president.
We'll follow you on Twitter too, Cyrus.
Twitter. And you can follow America Magazine on Twitter and Facebook as well. And for more, if you like what you've heard here today, you can subscribe to our magazine at 1-800-627-9533, and you can find everything at americamagazine.org/serious. Thanks very much for being with us today, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.